Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally, almost from the future, 2 p.m. on Tuesday here in New Zealand. Sean Boyd in the 916 Elk Grove, California. What's going on?
Man, the sun is what's going on, Sean Wally. I know that all up and down the West Coast, people are trying to find relief. And the best place that you can find it is in the nice, cool, central aired portion of your house. And of course, you have turned on the internet and you have tuned in to On the Double with the Double S Express with two cool individuals and Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. That's the best way to cool down, man. 106 degrees here in Sacramento. I believe Doug mentioned that it was around that down in Paradise. How was it over there in New Zealand, Sean Wally?
Oh, I don't want to put salt in the wounds. We've got partly sunny skies, the sun beaming off the lake, you know, about 50, 55 degrees. It's great.
Well, hey, some of those pictures you put on, man, are just majestic. Beautiful pictures. It looks like the Pacific Northwest. It looks like, you know, Commencement Bay, you know, near the, then circling around near the Narrows Bridge, you know, some of the water shots that you've taken. You know, kind of make you a little bit homesick, doesn't it? Hello. I think I've lost Sean. He has dropped momentarily. And so, again, the weather is very, very hot here up and down the western parts of the United States. And what has been very, very hot recently has been the NBA Finals. And, of course, the NBA Finals just took place. First two games that have taken place here in the Northern California in Oakland at the Oracle Arena. And, man, those first two games were excellent. Excellent in the fact that you saw some great basketball. You saw that LeBron James has a pulse and is alive and kicking and definitely will want to win the first NBA title for Cleveland. And, of course, the Golden State Warriors, the first time in 40 years, they're looking to win an NBA title with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and company. And they found out that it was going to be a tough, tough one as the Golden State Warriors took one on the chin at home yesterday, and this sets up something very serious for Golden State if they can't figure it out. It looked like with Kyrie Irving going out with an injury in the last game that it was smooth sailing for the Warriors and they would take this. As a matter of fact, there were a lot of people talking about sweep, saying that if two of the big three are out, meaning Kevin Love, who went out earlier in the playoffs, and since two of the big three were out, this made it a clear path for the Golden State Warriors to get their, again, first NBA title in 40 years. That isn't the case. The greatest player in the NBA in LeBron James woke up, kept his team involved this time, and they got a stunning victory in overtime, 95-93, against the Warriors. And yours truly had a chance to be at both of those games, and I can tell you that the excitement at Oracle did not disappoint. But what did disappoint was the absence, you could say, of one Steph Curry. Steph Curry was not himself. You know, I can tell you, was not himself at all, and had a very dismal day. Matthew Dellavedova had the chance to play defense against him most of the game. And I won't say that Dellavedova shut him down, but he did enough to help his team get the victory. And the Golden State Warriors now are in Cleveland looking forward for game 3 tomorrow at the Q. And we can expect another tremendous game by those two. We're going to try to see what's going on with Sean Wally. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we're going to talk a little bit more sports, so keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. And let's bring in big time guest number one, a big rap star here in New Zealand, King Kapisi. King, thanks for your time today.
I'm here.
Hey, well, welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express, man. And, you know, we as we brought you in, the first New Zealand recording rapper, is that correct?
No. There's been other recording rappers before me. I'm one of the first rappers or hip-hop artists that has won one of the songwriting Silver Scroll Awards in 1991. We're out here. We've been rapping for over 27 years. My wife, who was also on tour here, is the first female rapper in the country.
Oh, well, congratulations on that, man. That's a incredible feat right there.
Yeah, brother, it's like, you know, we love hip hop, but we also, you know, but I also love basketball. Like, I love basketball.
Okay, well, let's get right into it. Of course, the NBA Finals, game two was yesterday at Oracle Arena. And, man, LeBron James happened. And so which team are you rooting for here?
I mean, bruv, I mean, like, to be honest, my favorite player was Shaquille O'Neal, so he hasn't played for a couple of years, so I haven't gone and chosen a brand new player or a brand new team. He won it all over the place, so I've been trying to figure out a player that I'm going to choose as my new favorite player. Blake Griffin's come close. You know, LeBron, you know, he's always still rocking. I mean, but with the Golden State Warriors, they're the sort of underdogs. I'd never think that a team like that would ever win, and with LeBron having won before, I'm just keen on both teams to, you know, whoever takes it out, I'll be happy. But if I had to pick one team over the other, I'd probably pick the Cavs.
Now, King, going with the Cavs, are you a little surprised that LeBron was able to pull out the win yesterday with not very many of his supporting cast healthy and playing, and LeBron seemed to come out on another level and take things over?
Well, Sean, I mean, for me, brother, it's like being able to think that half of his team is injured, and with Kyrie, you know, being out with the knee fracture on his and his surgery being being successful today, I'm just happy that a guy like that has to prove himself as being the best player, one of the greatest players of all time, and if he's, you know, making wins and in the finals, especially without Kevin Love, without Kyrie Irving, then he's doing some pretty incredible things. And like he said last night in one of the interviews, it's a team effort and it's a team sport. I thought on the very last couple of, like, the last overtime of the first game, he was, you know, being a little bit greedy. He should have, like, passed the ball. But at that same time, who else do you have to pass to other than J.R. Smith? I'm a New York fan, and J.R. Smith is incredible, but if he's your second guy that you have to go to after, you know, so, yeah, it's just like I always feel that J.R. Smith is put in the hot seat by having to take the last shot, and, you know, his record isn't going too well, for me, that is.
Now, the Cavs basically took over home court advantage, and that was a big win last night. And it'll be interesting to see if Golden State can reclaim that and get a win in Cleveland.
Yeah, brother. I mean, like, I'm super looking forward to the third game. You know, like, I was amazed because I didn't actually know personally myself that Stephen Curry was Dale Curry's son. So, and when I found that, I was like, okay, his dad was an incredible shooter for the Supersonics. I mean, no wonder why that guy's mechanics are incredible. So, I think it's you know, it's either 50-50 with me. There's, you know, with LeBron shooting the way he is and him, you know, being able to dominate the game the way he is, I really truly hope that they do take it out. But with, you know, how the Golden State Warriors are going, with their bigs doing good, Bogut's doing good, everyone's, you know, pretty much on point, I possibly might think that the Golden State Warriors could take out the next game at home.
Now, King, you know, that's what I'm hoping as well. Of course, living in Northern California, I am rooting for the Golden State Warriors, and I've had the chance firsthand to watch this team in their 67 wins and during the regular season. They love to shoot the three. Do you see them at any point in the next, you know, making an adjustment here as far as possibly going to the basket a little bit more, or are the Splash Brothers just going to be themselves and continue to shoot threes?
Well, you know, for me personally, is the one thing that I don't understand is, like, you know how Steph Curry's mechanics are so incredible, but he's takes some crazy air balls sometimes, you know, like, and you just go air ball, and it's quite amazing to him, you know. And for me, for guys that shoot hoops every day, you should never ever, or, you know, like, that often shoot an air ball. But sometimes in the middle of a game, he'll just take a random three and it would just go, like, be nowhere near the hoop, and that type of stuff still amazes me. But I think with the outside shooting, with, you know, of the Splash Brothers, that, you know, what they can do is, like, in, I think it's Draymond Green too, as you know, one of the other guys that can go out and shoot incredible threes too. I mean, I hope that they do take it in. I mean, if they use their bigs with is it Thompson? So, you know, if they do go in a little bit more, I mean, they have the option to go in or out and, you know, play inside or outside. So, I mean, they're a well-rounded team. Cavs are still, you know, like, what's the center's name? He's like, you know, he does some pretty cool things that I've seen him do that I was like, okay, he can play like that. So I still think if we had to, like, shoot three, Shumpert and J.R. Smith are not as consistent as the Splash Brothers.
Yeah, no, you're talking about Mozgov, and this kid is phenomenal. He's a seven-footer, and he can jump out of the gym. And, you know, and so I had the chance to work the first two games for NBA TV, games one and two, and got a chance to talk with Mozgov, and he, man, what a down-to-earth young man, and you know, really enjoys the game and loves the game. Now, you were mentioning something as far as Golden State possibly getting the ball down into the post, and, you know, they have one Andrew Bogut who has yet to arrive, if you ask me, as far as the NBA Finals are concerned. And, you know, it's puzzling to me because I know he doesn't have the speed, but he is a savvy basketball player. But he's not being aggressive going to the basket and taking shots. He's doing making a lot of passes. Do you think that they're going to possibly do that inside-out game that you're talking about?
Well, one of the things is Andrew Bogut lives in a country that's pretty close. We're rivals. But, you know, so Australians, I mean, Andrew Bogut is from Australia. So Australians claim us as, you know, there. But, you know, when we move over there, and so we'll maybe might return the favor and claim Mr. Bogut. But if he's playing badly, we will not claim him at all.
Fantastic. Yeah,
I really hope that he does win a, you know, like, a lot of these players weren't even in the conversation this year or last year, you know, to win the finals. And with, you know, LeBron going back to the Cavs, that, you know, everyone was wondering if they're even going to make it to the finals. So if he's able to, LeBron is able to make this, you know, and pull this off, like, he will be, you know, in the conversation to actually be one of the greatest players of all time, or actually the greatest player of all time. I mean, he's won more MVPs. He's got, you know, to amount of points, you know, quicker than Michael Jordan. So, I mean, what's your guys' thoughts on that? I definitely reckon he's in the conversation.
Yeah, you know, I believe that LeBron James gets a kind of a bad rap in public opinion. I believe that the media and journalists alike will say that he is one of the greatest players and he falls into that realm. But for some reason, there are a lot of fans. And let's just say that some of the sports fans love a team that has gold and purple or gold and blue in Los Angeles. We'll just leave it at that. There are a lot of haters out there in that part of the country as far as LeBron James is concerned. But, you know, I believe that LeBron is one of the best players to ever play the game, no doubt. And if he can pull this one off, like you're saying, all this does is this adds to his legacy, because I don't think, you know, I don't think Kobe has ever won a championship by himself. He had a great supporting cast, regardless of what people say as far as LeBron James building his teams with what's called the Big Three. A lot of people are doing it now, but I don't think they were calling it that when, you know, when the Lakers were doing it. It was just a Big Five. They had a whole starting lineup that was just amazing. But yes, LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, you know, the Larry Birds, he belongs in that class, definitely.
Yep, definitely.
Now, King, you and your rapping, you have four albums that have come out. Which one is your favorite?
I'd probably say my first album, which was called Savage Thoughts. It had a song, it had a couple of songs in there. That was like, I was really lucky to be able to be signed. I was signed to a major label down here, which also turned into Warner Records after that. So I've been able to travel the world and you know, with my music, and I still travel the world. We've done Glastonbury, the biggest festival in Europe. We've done, you know, Asia. We've done the States. We've played over, you know, all around the world, and really been lucky to be able to, you know, find the things that I'm really good at, rocking crowds, interacting with people, and basically I'm a nice type of dude. So, you know, if I just do my thing, and I'm lucky that I've been able to support my family through this, you know, this musical career. And also, you're super lucky to have a wife that is also my DJ and my MC, my foundation, my rock. And while she's on stage, I'm on stage. And so we both travel the world, you know, regularly and perform to crowds and rock crowds. So that's what we do. And you know, really lucky and humbled to be able to do that.
You're working on a fifth album that will come out later this year. How much work goes into creating an album?
Well, from the last one, it's taken me 7 years from my last one. So, you know, people will be like, bro, you're a little bit slow, man. You're taking a long time. But, we, you know, we're not slouches over here. We have a clothing company. We, you know, direct and edit our own music videos, edit. What else do? We have a store which you can check online and stuff. So we're busy people. Between me and my wife, we have around 26 roles just between us two. So, you know, we're very busy people. Also, we have four sons. I'm very happy that three of them can dunk, you know, and our youngest is getting there. He's nearly as tall as me. So, you know, at the age of you know, of a ripe age of older type of gentleman that I am, I'm still happy that I can still throw it down. I'm like around 6'2". Yeah, still playing, still hooping every day.
I love it. King Capizzi joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And now King Sean has mentioned to me that you are doing some things with the Trotters. And so what capacity are you working with the Globetrotters?
Well, if my wife is 2IC, and then maybe I'm 3IC. So yeah, we're touring them around New Zealand, down at the bottom of the world, and then we're doing Australia in about a week, and then also we travel with the Globetrotters around to South Africa. So it is a 3-country tour. We're looking, you know, the team is incredible, entertaining crowds and rocking crowds is what they do, and they, you know, they're super, super incredible. And we've seen some incredible, happy people here in Aotearoa, New Zealand already. So they're doing an incredible job.
King Capizzi, what have you learned from traveling the world, not only for your own career, but also with the Globetrotters, about fans and about life around the globe?
The one thing that I've learned is that as a artist, as a entertainer, maybe sometimes, you know, like a fan or someone that enjoys what we do, it might be the only time to be able to see us, regardless if we're on stage or if we're on the court. One thing that I'm really aware of is that, you know, like you give someone a hug, it's like a warm fuzzy. It can make a person's day. It could make their year. It could make their life. And it's a lasting memory that they'll always remember. So one thing that I see with the Globetrotters and what I try to do also is that, you know, really relay that in the world there is that love. There are people that care about, you know, how people feel and what they're doing in their lives. So, you know, if we have to stop to say hello, write a signature, take a photo, take an Instagram selfie with someone, I always remember that that might be that person's thing they're going to remember about you for the rest of their lives. So, you know, I really, really am humbled by, you know, being able to talk and share what we do with crowds around the world and with the community. So, you know, being able to inspire the youth and give them hope is something that I definitely and truly believe in. So if we can do that and give the youth of the world a little bit of direction on something that they want to do and just show them that they can do what they want to do and also travel the world, well, then more power to us and more power to the people.
King Capisi, great words that he has learned traveling the globe. Thank you so much for your time and insight. You can find King Capisi on Facebook and on Twitter at King Capisi. Thanks for your time, buddy.
Thanks, King, and good luck to you, man.
Cheers. You too.
There goes King Capisi from New Zealand doing great things in the entertainment world.
Yeah, you know, he has a real positive vibe, you know, as far as, you know, just wanting to do some positive things. And, you know, he is an entertainer. He's you know, he's making albums and helping out with the Globetrotters and doing a lot of stuff. Clothing line, man. He's staying busy. And so that's what it's all about. Some good stuff by King Capisi. We are going to take another break. And when we return, we're going to have guest number two, Dave Grosby. 710 ESPN, so keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
I'm gonna hop some tags, only got $20 in my pocket. I'm hunting, looking for a come up. This is awesome.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, Platinum Service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product, helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on the double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. It's time to go out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number two tonight. And that is Dave Grosby of Bob Gros and Tom Middays on 710 ESPN Seattle. Gros, thanks for your time.
My pleasure. How are you guys doing tonight?
Great, great, Gros. Thanks for being on the show here. And man, I want to get right into it. Of course, being here in Northern California, and I believe that you have some Sacramento roots. Is that correct?
In fact, as I sit here on my right hand is a Sacramento State ring circa 1989 when I did their play-by-play, and they actually, the football team made it to the Division II Final Four. It was actually the year I met my wife, who I'm still married to. So, yes, I was in Sacramento for most of the 80s, as a matter of fact. Was on the original Kings broadcasting team, all of that. So, yes, very fond feelings for Sacramento and the, well, and go, Northern California.
Well, go Hornets, definitely.
Nice.
Awesome stuff. Well, of course, you know the Sacramento Kings are not in the finals, but the Golden State Warriors are. And, man, they're getting a little awakening here by the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James. What's your take on the finals going on right now?
Well, it's funny. Up in Seattle, we don't pay a whole lot of attention to the NBA anymore. Still a lot of bitterness up here. But on the other hand, in watching the game the last 2 days, and the Warriors are great. Tim Roy, of course, was former voice of the Kings, and we both worked at KFBK at the same time. I know Tim really well, and think it would be great for him to be a part of this, but boy, I tell you what, I mean, I just think that you come to the fourth quarter, it's got nothing to do with the last game, in general. When you come to the fourth quarter, and you got LeBron James on your team, you know, as long as you're in the game, it feels like, you know, he can do what he did the other night. You know, what are you going to do with 6'9", 275? I mean, you can't impact it. You can't influence it. I mean, unless, you know, and now it becomes a big story that he didn't get the superstar calls at the end of the last game where they hammered the crap out of him, and it didn't seem to make any difference. So, you know, I think much of, you know, LeBron is always compared to Jordan, and I think it's been properly brought up. You know, we have Sean Kemp still lives up here. We had him on the air last week, and, you know, when he was talking about Steph Curry, he said all the things of the guys of that great era of basketball said, and that is that it was a much more physical game when Jordan and those guys played, and it's because of a reason. It's because the guys are so much bigger and stronger now. You really can't be the same way as it was back then. But you look at LeBron James, and I get the same feeling I'd get if Michael Jordan lost a teammate or two. I mean, would you feel like your odds were better? Would you feel like they'd take it upon themselves to find another gear? And that's what it seems to me like he has done. Now, this has got a long way to go, man. I like everyone else, they see it going seven games. I know a lot of people looked at Kyrie Irving going out and thinking, well, that's that. And, you know, it's not just that simple, especially when you've got a wild card like just a super player in LeBron James.
And yeah, you're definitely right, Gros. And you know, the type of player that LeBron is, he is a physical specimen that imposes his will. Now, you're mentioning that it might go seven games, and if it does, that would be great for NBA basketball. But do you see, or do you think that LeBron can sustain this type of a pace that he is bestowed on everybody in the first two games?
Well, I think that, you know, it's become, look, if the games are like game two was, it may not go seven. Cleveland may win it sooner. I mean, you got the two great contrasts in styles now. With Irving out, the Cavaliers have got to be all about dogged defense. And I say hitting Steph Curry every single time. I'd pull a page out from the old Pat Riley book and see if they're going to foul out three or four guys guarding him. I mean, they have got to win with defense. So it's that simple. And that's kind of going against the grain. It's a little like the Seahawks football team up here, you know, winning with a running game. You know, it's a little bit different than what in vogue is right now. So, you know, for the Cavaliers to win, I mean, they've got to be able to continue to play defense the way they have. And I think they probably can. You know, when you got James committed to it as he is, you know, if that's the case, the games are in the 80s, you know, low 90s. And I think everyone was expecting much higher scoring when it started. You know, I think Cleveland's got the real chance at it. I can just see a scenario where the Cavaliers, every single game, their goal is to just stay within 10. And the fourth quarter comes and they're up down 8 or 10 points with 10 minutes to go. I'm telling you, if I'm a Warrior, I'm not a confident basketball player. And none of those guys have that, you know, the finals experience a little bit. And and Cleveland has already come back, you know, on them, and they've already, you know, geez, it's still hard to believe that game yesterday where the Warriors, you know, made that tremendous comeback and yet still lose the game, you know, at home. So mental toughness, things that you can't exactly be sure about. I mean, they're going to be on display. You know, for me, just telling you what I think, I mean, it's probably more of a hope than anything else. Hope it goes seven games because this is a very tough one to predict. You got such a different feel to this particular series than you've had in recent ones that it's really hard to say what's going to come. But I just, you know, I get the feeling LeBron is absolutely going to be able to carry the Cavaliers, and I don't see Curry and Klay Thompson and those guys stepping down either. I don't see them just giving it up. So I think it's going to be a really terrific series.
Dave Grosman, joining us of 710 ESPN Seattle. And Dave, of all this NBA talk and, of course, the finals upon us, you're right. There is not a lot of love for the NBA in Seattle anymore, but there are two arena possibilities. Will either one actually come to fruition at some point soon?
You know, the one that probably got the most attention, especially those in Northern California, remember, was the Chris Hansen-Steve Ballmer deal, which was in an area near where Safeco Field is, where the Mariners play, and where the football stadium is. And it's basically south downtown Seattle. And they bought the land. They were ready to go. And really, that deal was involved so many moving pieces that it's impossible to redo, in my opinion, even though, you know, hope is still going forward. I mean, they have still not concluded the environmental impact study on the whole thing yet. You know, it's 2 years later. You know, for that matter. And they've still got the Port of Seattle very much against it. The Mariners, because of some traffic issues, very much against it. Seattle, in a fit of anger, passed a proposition here that basically prohibits public spending on stadiums and arenas, which, frankly, I think is a good idea. I think it's ridiculous that these leagues are holding up cities for arenas. And I guess it's unfortunate they did it in Sacramento, but I mean, that's how you got to keep the team. That's how the game is played these days. But, you know, anyway, it was Proposition 93 or whatnot. And they somehow managed to jury-rig it in with the previous mayor and the previous city council to actually have a public contribution to this arena thing. But it's a much smaller contribution if it's hockey first. And because there's nothing happening in the NBA right now, it would be hockey first. So they'd have to redo it. Well, there's a honest-to-goodness socialist now on the city council in Seattle. So there's no appetite whatsoever to be spending public money for arenas. So if it's going to happen, it's going to happen with private money, and I think it's very likely. It's going to happen in the suburbs in an area of Bellevue. There's already been some talk about it. But one thing that seems very clear is that it'll be hockey first before it's basketball. They won't get a basketball team until there is expansion. And meantime, the NBA would come here at the drop of a hat. I mean, they would come probably even play at Key Arena, which is still up but a terrible hockey facility. So to answer your question, I do think it's a longer timetable than everyone thinks. But I do think in 5 years or so, there'll be a new arena here. There'll be a hockey team. But I don't know when the NBA is coming.
Switching over to the team that plays at Safeco Field, the Seattle Mariners, taking a nosedive quickly. Is there any hope to awaken the bats for the Mariners?
Oh, this is just the worst. I mean, the Mariners just had their worst homestand in their history. That includes the 1977 expansion Mariners. Never went 2-9 on 11-game homestand. Only this team has done that. It's beyond belief how bad this year has worked out. Now, they're only seven games under .500, which happens to be the second worst record in the American League, and lucky to be in the American League West, where it doesn't appear to be anyone that strong. I mean, Houston had played great, but has lost four in a row, and everyone continues to believe that they're a little bit ahead of the curve. If the Angels are going to be something special, they haven't turned into it yet. The Mariners are just three games behind them. So in a weird way, they're still very much in it. On the other hand, if you watch them play, there's no shot. I mean, they're averaging less than, on this homestand, they average less than two runs a game. You know, Robinson Cano has been bad. You know, it's one thing to be in a slump, and he is. And Nelson Cruz, unfortunately, has fallen off, well, as they knew he would, the pace he'd been on in the last week or two. But the Mariners are playing bad baseball. They're making base-running mistakes that you don't see in high school ball. And it's Cano and Cruz who are making them. You know, that's bad stuff. You know, you had Lloyd McClendon in this particular homestand. You know, take the team out and very publicly before batting practice do a kind of a base running drill thing. And the net result of it is your two best players make complete boneheaded mistakes. Mistakes that again, college players know better than to make. Constantly you see guys wondering how many outs there are. They're just not playing crisp. They're not playing good. It's always possible for teams to turn it around. It is the beauty of baseball. There's still 105, 110 games, something like that left. And you can say, well, this doesn't team doesn't look like they can turn it around. And it happens all the time. Teams can do it. But there is nothing that we've seen that would make you think that this team is likely to do it. They haven't turned anything around. I mean, their leadoff man has been Logan Morrison, their best leadoff hitter. I mean, a guy who would never possibly steal a base. It's just their pitching is great, and that's what kind of keeps them in the whole thing, because it's a very, very thin margin. When you're only giving up a couple of runs a game, you don't need to score that many. But here they are again with a tremendous pitching performance on the homestand, going 2-9. Again, the bad base running stuff, the bad baseball. They make a big move with Mark Trumbo. I mean, you may not have to give it up. Dominic Leone wasn't much, but it's a guy out of their bullpen. They've now traded two guys out of their bullpen. So obviously the front office has a sense that they don't like what they're seeing and don't believe they have the right mix. And it's impossible to think that they do. So a very disappointing homestand. They're in a situation, in my opinion, where they got to turn around fast. And look, again, there's 100 games to go. But if you play at a 500 pace and Houston gets hot or something like that again, you find yourself at the end of June down 12 games. It's academic, at that point. So they've got the second wild card going for them, which kind of always keeps you in it. But at the same time, if you're playing 7-10 games under 500, you're not going to be the wild card. So I think I said on the air last week that I thought the next 3 weeks were really pretty important. One of those weeks is in the books, and it was unfortunately very impactful in a negative way. They got, in my book, two more weeks to go. They play Houston six times during that stretch, so they got a chance to truly impact their status in the division. And I think, by the end of June, we're going to have an idea where this team is at and if they have any shot at anything this year, which is not the plan at the start of the year.
Dave Grosby joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And now, Gros, you had mentioned Lloyd McClendon. Now, is he in trouble at all? I mean, you mentioned there's 100 games left, yes. But is he in trouble if they can't turn this around by the end of the season?
It doesn't seem that he should be. I mean, last year they won 87 games, and, they didn't do it by accident. He had a lot to do with it and got a tremendous amount of credit for it and was, in the top five voting of manager of the year. I mean, you're telling me now you don't know how to manage again? I mean, it's although in this society, you don't get many chances, but, I got to say no. I mean, I can't look at Lloyd McClendon and say, well, he's the problem. If he was the problem, last year, how'd they win 87 games? That wouldn't be my takeaway. My takeaway would be, you got to take a hard look at the guys who have been running this thing for the last 7 years. And that starts with Jack Cerenzik, and he knows that. I mean, that's what you take on as a general manager. But, if you have right now they're on pace to win like 71 or 72 games, which would be just one of the most colossal disappointments in club history if it winds up being that way. If it does, and, you're Jack Cerenzik, and it's your seventh year, and you're 72-90, and you're committed to all this money to Robinson Cano, who you assume has not had a good year, and you've used up a lot of your farm system, to make this run this year. I mean, that to me is where you wind up looking. I mean, that's where a logical person is going to wind up looking. So I don't think it's Lloyd McClendon. I like Lloyd McClendon. I like his approach. In baseball, it's not about firing the guys up. I mean, you can't grip the bat harder and hit it better. It doesn't work that way. As much as Lou Piniella got credit for being fiery this and fiery that, he was a different guy with players. Players didn't feel that way at all, and they loved him. So he wasn't a guy who took guys down or anything like that or embarrassed guys. And McClendon's not doing it either. So he's got this team in a position to turn it around. Now, whether or not they can is another question. But they haven't fallen apart. A lot of times teams with big expectations that do bad, you hear about backbiting or sniping or guys not trying hard, all the telltale stuff. And while in the case here you got guys playing sloppy baseball, which certainly doesn't look good, you don't get a sense that it's from lack of effort or lack of interest, et cetera, et cetera. So I would not put the blame on Lloyd McClendon in this circumstance.
Well, yeah, let's hope that the Mariners can definitely turn this around here soon. And as you'd mentioned before, there's 100 games left, so there's plenty of time to do that.
Yeah.
Let's shift gears here. Now, there is a huge golf tournament that's going to be coming up, the Chambers Bay in Tacoma, Washington, actually University Place in the U.S. Open. My goodness, this past weekend at the Memorial could not be any worse for young. Actually, I can't say. Can I say young? Tiger Woods? I'll just say Tiger Woods. I mean, my God, what did he shoot? 85 and in the third round. And so, you know, there's some big names coming up for the U.S. Open. Are you excited for that?
Absolutely. It's going to be very interesting because I think the golfers are all going to hate the course, and those who have already come up and played it are being very charitable and saying things like it's interesting and it's different and things like that. But it is a complete departure for the USGA to have an open on a course like this, which is much more like a British Open course than even British Open courses are. I mean, you've got a course where the same grass is used for the green and the fairway, which means you really can't tell where one starts and the other ends. And that's, you know, more than anything else will tell you how different it looks, along with, of course, no trees and everything like that. You got a 530-yard par 4. It's a dogleg left and uphill a little bit. I mean, this is an impossible hole. It's impossible. You guys will have to play it low and skip it on up there. You've got angles, circles. I was lucky enough to play in the Pro-Am day out there. It's just going to be a completely unique thing. Now, on the other hand, you got a couple of holes that just look spectacular. You know, 16th hole on television with trains going by the water, looks unbelievable. But I think it's going to be a tremendous, you know, certain greens, they're still getting squared away a little bit. I mean, it's a very young course for all this. I think, you know, Adam Scott was up playing it today. I think the word is getting out. You've got to get it. If you got a chance, and this is the last chance this week, is to get up and play a practice round today or tomorrow. And you got some guys trying to do it. You had the qualifying today all over the country, and it was sad to hear the Fred Couples at age 55 was trying to qualify down in California. I had to pull out because of his back, so he won't have a chance to play in an open in his own backyard. But yeah, I think it's going to be very exciting for everyone to have those guys here, and it's a very wide open tournament. But I think the reaction you're going to hear more than anything is it's not necessarily a negative, but the pros are not going to like the course. It's going to embarrass them.
Now, Graz, you've been in sports broadcasting for the better part of, what, at least three decades, and you've done a lot radio, TV. You also do play-by-play for Seattle U men's basketball. Just off the top of your head, what are some of your favorite moments in the world of sports broadcasting?
Oh, wow. Actually, it's been 41 years. I am really old, although I did start really young, so that helps as well. But well, probably for me, you know, in terms of not doing play-by-play, and I've done some, and I did some Canes play-by-play, and I've done some football and things like that, but it's hard to top what happened here in 1995 with the Mariners making their incredible run, and I did pre- and post-game that year, was the only guy who did it. And after, you know, to be able to go on the air after an hour after game 5, after Edgar Martinez's double, we were down at a bar restaurant down by the Kingdom, and we went on the air, you know, 35, 40 minutes after the game ended. So we were on the air probably by about 11, and we stayed on the air till about 4 in the morning that night, taking calls from all over the country, just having an out-of-control time. Bob Wolcott, who wound up pitching game 1 against the Cleveland Indians, came down there and hung out with us. All the broadcasters came down and hung out with us. You know, that was absolutely a night to never forget. And then with the Sonics, there were so many great times, too, because, you know, I've been in Seattle for almost 25 years now. And when the Sonics were here, they were fantastic. They were in the playoffs every single year. And then, of course, it was the George Karl, Gary Payton, Sean Kemp years, which may have been the most fun team ever to cover, ever. I mean, it's hard to even imagine. I couldn't even begin to tell you what it was like every single day, something crazy going on. But that team being so good and always playing, you know, in the Western Conference Finals, all those times the Western Conference Finals, you know, hanging out at Seattle Center or whatnot, were just absolutely sensational times. But, you know, I've been around, like I told you, for a long, long time. So I've been lucky enough as a broadcaster, you know, when I was a teenager. I started when I was 13, you know, to see a lot of crazy things. I mean, in the 70s, I saw Muhammad Ali fight. Three times, you know, one of them at Madison Square Garden when he fought Ernie Shavers, one of them at Yankee Stadium when he fought Ken Norton, and, you know, those are things you just, you know, I wasn't covering them at that point, I was just at them, and those are things that you just don't forget, and, you know, in terms of covering, you know, I did work in New York media for a little while, so had a chance to see the New York Islanders win a Stanley Cup, back in 1980, way back in the day, and saw what had a press pass and saw Reggie Jackson hit the three home runs when the Yankees won in 76. So you know, that was a lot of fun. And then I was in Sacramento for the 80s. So in Sacramento, the most fun thing that happened there was the arrival of the Kings. And it was just an incredible thing to see that arrive in a community. And then from there to LA, up here to Seattle for 25 years, the most of the great sports highlights, you know, up here in Seattle. And really would center around 95. You know, 2005, the Seahawks' first Super Bowl was fantastic. The last 2 years of the Seahawks has been great. But there were some about those times when, you know, everyone kind of pulled together. There wasn't as much access to it as there is now. So you, even if you didn't have a ticket for the game or something like that, you'd want to be down hanging out in the area a little bit. And that's what makes times like 95 in particular and the 97, 98 Sonic years and whatnot really stick out.
With your 41 years of sports broadcasting experience, what advice would you have for somebody maybe in college looking to get into the business?
You know, the classic thing that everyone says is, you know, don't do it because it's a tough business. But the thing is, it's a completely changing business. So, you know, I used to be able to give fairly good advice, but, you know, the business that you will be in is not the business that I'm in. You know, radio as it is, terrestrial radio as we're doing this show right now, you know, we all know is going away. Once they figure out a way to make it easy to push buttons, not so much serious radio, but just push buttons and get radio quote stations in on the internet, will be the end of local radio. It'll be a different deal. It'll be available locally, but it won't be the same thing. So it's funny for me to give advice because, you know, I think the advice is you got to be ready for anything. You got to be wide open to anything. And the most important thing to know, I guess, is all that matters is that someone in a position of power likes the way you sound. So experience does not matter. Do not be afraid to lay down 10 minutes of a riff or, you know, a sports talk thing or have someone, you know, pretend to call you in and do a little bit and use that as a demo tape. If someone likes how you sound, it doesn't matter how much experience you have or how little experience you have. They like how you sound, you got a shot at it. So, you know, in terms of that, I mean, that's really the only advice I feel like I can give because to me, the ground is shifting. I mean, it's becoming a whole new world out there. It's an exciting time because there'll always be a need for content. You know, that's the truth, too. There'll always be a need for content, and sports is always local. That will never change. No matter how everything else goes around, there'll always be a need or niche for local sports talk. Where exactly it'll show up, you know, remains to be seen, but it's out there. So, you know, you don't need experience to be good at flapping your gums, that's for sure.
Dave Grosby, thank you so much for your time tonight. You can listen to Dave 12 to 3 on 710 ESPN Seattle with Bob Graz and Tom. It's been a pleasure. You know, Sean and I have both followed your career and listened and watched you on TV through the years, and it's been a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Graz.
Thank you guys very much. My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you very much.
There goes Dave Grosby in an air-conditioned condo in Seattle, keeping cool as the heat pours on the West Coast.
Yes, man. And, you know, he had some great pearls of wisdom as far as, you know, getting into the industry. And, yeah, if you sound good, man, and you know, the way that our industry is ever so evolving and that, you know, of course, as he was mentioning, we are on internet right now. And so, you know, the old style is going away and, you know, you have to reinvent yourself over and over again. You know what I wanted to ask? I forgot to ask him, Sean. I wanted to ask, you know, because he'd mentioned the 96 Sonics, that team that played against the Chicago Bulls, wound up, actually taking one on the chin 4-2 to Michael Jordan. I wanted to ask him how that team would fare in the finals, either against Cleveland, this year's Cleveland team, or Golden State. We have to have him on and see what his thoughts were about that, man. I'm thinking that the Sonics handled business, no doubt about it. No matter if it was LeBron in the Cavaliers or Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors. What do you think?
Well, as Dave mentioned, it's a different era, and the 80s, 90s was a lot more physical. So I don't know that either of those teams, whether it be the Cavs or the Golden State Warriors, I mean, if you look at just by conference, Seattle would play Cleveland, but I don't know if either of those teams would know how to combat a physical style, a defense of the glove, Gary Payton, that's suffocating, a Sean Kemp down low that who's going to stop him? Who's going to body up on him and be able to slow him down?
Yeah, you know, and you mentioned two cogs with that Sonics team. At the same time, they did have a little bit of finesse with them as well, with Hersey Hawkins shooting a three, Detlef Schrempf. It wasn't necessarily physical. Those guys were actually mid-range and long-range snipers, just like Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. I think it would be a good series, you know, to have, you know, when you think about it. But that post presence with Sean Kemp, I just think that he would annihilate an Andrew Bogut and a Muzcov as well, you know, for the Cleveland Cavaliers. So, I mean, you know, it's just a hypothetical. You know, I would see, you know, if it was the Warriors that Sonics played, that 96 team would I'd probably say it could go seven games. LeBron James led Cleveland Cavaliers, you know, it could go six, possibly seven as well, but it'd be good entertainment.
Maybe that's something somebody can draw up on, you know, an NBA 2K game, unlock the Sonics and have at it.
Yeah, man. You know, I feel for you guys up in the Pacific Northwest and not having an NBA team. You know, there are some things going there was something that I put out on Facebook a couple of days ago, I believe that you saw, was that, you know, some celebrities that are stepping out and buying starter jackets to show a sign of solidarity to, you know, for the Sonics to come back. And I don't know how big of an impact that would be, but I think that'd be cool to have one of the old school Sonic starters jackets. I mean, it wouldn't be cool today, you know, with the heat that's going on now, but you know, to have one of those in your closet and, you know, be able to pull that out, I think would be a cool gesture.
And yet another way for the NBA to still make money off of the Seattle Supersonics, even though they don't exist.
You know, Graz kind of hurt me a little bit. And he says, you know, I don't see it in the near future, you know, meaning the Sonics coming back to Seattle. It is in the forefront as far as the NHL is concerned, and either way you can get it. If you can get an arena any way you can, you know, I say go ahead and get it. Build that daggone thing. Have an NHL team in there, and if you have to make the adjustment and, you know, for it to put an NBA floor in there, I mean, gosh, whatever way you have to do it right now. I just think that enough is enough with all the talking and you know, kicking rocks and kicking in the dirt and not doing anything. Let's make this happen. You know, let's bring the Sonics back. And if you do have an NHL team, Sean Wally, just think of all the major sports. Out of all the major cities in America, Seattle would be the mecca of professional sports. You'd have an NHL team, an NBA team, an NFL team, Major League Baseball. Let's not forget the MLS soccer. You know, I mean, it would be a mecca for sports, and Seattle is deserving of that.
Absolutely, and it's one of those things that should have happened already. You know, the Sonics left in 08, and here we are in 2015, and there's still no arena.
And again, you know, this whole thing in the SoDo is really bothersome. I know the Mariners have a little bit to say as far as traffic is concerned. You know, Lord knows that we have that problem here in Northern California where there's a franchise that can actually control other sports from actually being able to do what they need to do to build a facility. I do agree with Graz as far as public funding. That has to be out. If you want a stadium, make sure that stadium is something that, you know, that the owners and the leagues alike can fund the majority of it. I know that here in Sacramento, it's a unique situation. It just so happened that, you know, the city really, really wanted that franchise, and it is unique down here. But for Seattle, you know, you have the longshoremen that are blocking that down in SoDo, and then you have the whole Tukwila thing that's coming up. At some point, you know, the legislature, the powers that be, the city council, everybody has to come together and say, man, we want this more than anything. It sure does sound like they want it, so just make it happen.
Now, Sean, before we run, let's touch on your extended weekend working for NBA TV. Not only that, but Devon Boyd got his first taste of freelance production work.
Man, it was so exciting to get it, to have the chance to have my son. You know what? You know, when you have your kids do something that you do, it is a great, great feeling. And you know, Devon had the chance to work as what they call an IT runner. So he's with the IT group, and he learned a lot from it. You know, to be honest with you. And you know, yeah, there's the fun parts, you know, the behind the scenes and getting a chance to see the shoot around. I thought that was cool with, you know, with my son to get a chance to be at shoot around and watch Steph Curry come out, watch LeBron James come out and see how these guys act before the lights come on. You know, that was so cool. And so many celebrities at the games as well, you know, and getting a chance to hang out with them. And so it was a fun game one and two. You know, of course, that's, you know, we're Golden State Warriors. We're rooting for the Warriors fans. And, you know, yeah, that one stung a little bit yesterday, but, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that the Golden State Warriors are actually going to come out and win this thing. When Kyrie Irving went out, I thought that it was going to be a sweep. I'm one of those people that jumped on the bandwagon and said, oh my God, we're getting ready to handle this in four games. I thought that at the worst case it would be in five, but now watching how LeBron James played, it's a little bit different, and it's amazing how a few days are, you know, in the situation. I do see it going six, possibly seven games, and this is a brawl. But to get back to, you know, working the NBA finals, man, what a great feeling. You know, the first couple of days, hardly anybody was there. It was just a lot of development and structure and putting things together. But as we got closer to that game one and the whole world collapsing, and, you know, what my job was is I handled the international world feed. So there are 15 to 20 countries that I was involved with as far as putting that on the air. And that was amazing as well. And so just a great time, great week, great weekend for NBA basketball in Northern California.
Is this series a 2-3-2 or 2-2-1-1-1? And
yeah,
I'm asking that because...
Yeah, you just don't care about basketball right now because there's not a team in Seattle. I get that. But yeah, it's a 2-2-1-1-1.
Okay, and, so you are guaranteed at least one more game to work for the NBA Finals.
Yeah, at least one more game, yes.
Well, hang on now. Isn't there a possibility that that could overlap with U.S. Open duties?
It is going to overlap. And so for Devon, he's going to get a chance to work game five. And that's one of the things we kind of crossed our fingers at. We didn't want it to happen at home, doggone it. But, you know, we kind of said, hey, you know, maybe game three or game four, you know, maybe LeBron can steal one at home. We didn't expect it to happen last night. So now, you know, biting our nails a little bit and saying, man, you know what, this might go six games. But, yeah, there's one more game for him, and I will be heading up to, man, the beautiful sun of the Pacific Northwest and working the U.S. Open. Exciting, man. I'm excited about that, too.
It's going to be interesting to see what the weather is like for that tournament because, you know, right now it's very warm, if not hot. And so...
Low
but
70s.
As we know, the low cycles change and the new fronts come in. So who knows what things are going to be like in a week to 10 days.
Yeah, low 70s on Thursday and Friday. And then you're looking at the weather increasing Saturday. That on the 20th should be about 85 degrees with Sunday, a mild 75. You can tell that I'm very excited about this, Sean Wally. I've been checking the weather, knowing what I need to pack and all of that stuff. It's going to be fun up in Tacoma. U.S. Open, all the big wigs coming in. Man, it's going to be amazing.
Man, if that holds out and it doesn't rain and it's not blustery, I tell you what, the U.S. not necessarily the U.S. Open, but some major golf tournament will be back at that course as long as they put it in June, July, August time frame. For weather-wise, that's the smartest thing to do. And if they have pristine weather all week, does it get any better?
It doesn't. I mean, you know, the way the course is set, like Graz was explaining, I mean, it's going to be rolling. It's going to be fast. Looking at the greens, how they blend in, the fairways blend in with the greens, and it overlooking the beautiful Puget Sound with the Olympic Mountains in the background and the nearby islands as well. Oh, man, it is going to be picturesque. And, yeah, that will put, again, another feather in the cap, not just for the Pacific Northwest, but for Tacoma, for all the world to see.
You know, Sean, before we run here, got to get two quick points in. One being last night here in Queenstown, New Zealand. Of course, I was repping the 12s and sporting some Seahawk attire. Going to a restaurant, and the server thanked me, like, right on the second he saw me. I'm like, oh, for what? He goes, man, I had to serve 49er fans the last 2 days, and it was horrible. So I'm glad to see a Seahawk fan in here. So that was pretty awesome and random at the same time.
Well, you know what's funny about that is it, no matter if you're in Northern California or over in New Zealand, 49er fans don't live in the real. And so I'm sure that they were probably saying some crazy stuff. And, you know, it bugs everybody the wrong way. Man, I know my email's going to be flooded, but I don't care, doggone it, because it is. It's crazy how 49er fans are just so far gone that they think that, you know, their team – I'm sure that they feel that they're going to the Super Bowl again this year, regardless of the four players that retired in the offseason, which is just ridiculous to me. And, you know, the exodus of players, whether it's due to injury or just – you know, because ownership wants to get rid of all their good players. You know, I'm sure the fans, the 49er faithful, believe that their team is going to do some damage this year.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if they can even win 4, 5, 6 games down in San Francisco. But a lot of time to get into that as the summer rolls on. And man, Sean, this a little bit of a testament to my dedication to this show, as I was bugged a lot yesterday by Rob, Jimmy, trainer and tour manager, and one of my players on the Generals to go spend, a good $400 on excursions that you would jump at the chance to do. Wink, wink, literally.
I already know where this is going.
The first was a jet boat on a river this morning. About 8:45 this morning, they're going on this super speed boat that does like hairpin 360 turns and heads right for the rocks and then cuts away from them last second, scaring the stuff out of you. And then what I would have liked to do that, then the next thing was a helicopter up to the top of a mountain to a zip line course. That would have been awesome. But the part that I probably would not have done, or who knows, maybe I would have bit the bullet, is jump with a bungee tied to me, bungee jumping off of a bridge.
Oh, wow. Wow. So you just want to end it all. You really? I mean, so it'll be on the double with the single S Express.
Well, that's funny because I told those guys, I said, wow, I said, I'm going to need a new player. We're going to need a new tour manager and a new team trainer. Goodness. So
I know this sounds kind of wacky because I'm a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air fan. And so whenever that show comes on, I'm glued to it. I don't even care how many times I've seen episodes. Every time I watch one of the episodes, it seems like it's brand new, but when you talk about the bungee cord, all I can think about is Hillary being proposed to by her fiance Trevor Collins, and he's
the
jumping.
Weather guy.
The weather guy. And just before he hits asks, "Will you marry me?" He hits the ground on the bungee.
You splat?
Oh my goodness! Thank God you didn't do it, man.
Well, there definitely wouldn't have been any proposals had I done it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm glad you're over there having fun. And, of course, New Zealand. Where's the next stop after New Zealand?
The 14th, we head to Australia.
All right. Australia. So that's some cool stuff right there. And I don't believe that it's summer season over there, but it should be still pretty good weather though in Australia.
Yeah, it's their winter as well. And, you know, we'll see. Hopefully we can get some 60s if we're lucky, but, you know, it seems like everything's in the 50s, so that may be where we sit.
Oh, man. Well, still, it's still pretty over there, and, you know, they have nice beaches as well, and I'm sure that you'll make the most of it.
And you'll definitely see some pictures on Facebook for sure. Well, Sean, it's been an exciting show. Thanks to King Kapisi joining us here from New Zealand. Man, we had a New Zealand star on the show. He is promoting the Harlem Globetrotter tour and also a rap artist as well. And then, of course, Seattle sports radio icon Dave Grosby, a.k.a. The Groz from 710 ESPN Seattle. Great to hear his thoughts on all things sports.
Well, man, it's been another great show. And, man, I can't even remember what show number, so I'm not even going to go into that. But King Kapisi, best of luck to you, man, and continue the great success and entertainment. And Groz, you know, you're welcome on this show anytime. Of course, as you had mentioned, on the Bob Groz and Tom Show on 710 ESPN. Sean Wally, we can wrap this one again, my friend. And as I always like to say, you're not in the game until you take a shot. And when you take a shot, hope it hits nothing but the bottom of the net. Take note of that, Steph Curry, because I definitely want you to hit some shots there. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express and a DSX LLC production. For Doug Newsom, Sean Wally over in New Zealand, I'm Sean Boyd in the hot confines of Northern California. Been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.